quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen lands of the Catesay, Kwikwetlem, and Stolla First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of this place. We thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie. Recently, I read some classic Class S stories. Well, they were like an adaptation. They were a comic adaptation of some classic Class S stories. And I wanted to, well, okay, after reading them, I just had more questions in my mind. If you're not aware, Class S is a, I guess you could call it like a Japanese literary genre, which was the progenitor, well, that makes it seem all divine and stuff, but which was the origins of what we call today girls' love manga or yuri manga or anything any type of media falling into the girls' love or yuri definition. And this genre of literature, Class S, began being written in the early 1900s. Its influence is so profound, important, I guess, that it's actually not even all that accurate to say that it mostly influenced yuri manga or yuri as a genre. Rather, anything that falls under shoujo manga is also heavily influenced by it as well. Last year on Typically Tuesdays, during the month of August, I spent several weeks making recommendations for girls' love manga that I personally have enjoyed and I think you could also enjoy as well. And in that series, I talked a little bit about Class S. I talked a little bit specifically about the author Yoshio Nobuko and her series Hana Monogatari. And I wanted, after reading specifically a manga adaptation of some chapters in the Hana Monogatari series of stories, I thought that it would be appropriate to talk a little bit more about it on today's program. Yeah, that's the show today. Strap in, I guess. And this is yet another installment of this August's Leslie Talks at Length about media and literature depicting same-gender romances and her thoughts on them. Ooh, catchy title. No? On the playlist today is songs that are kinda yuri. I don't even know how to describe this other than there are homoerotic undertones in these songs. and possibly in the music video. Are they actually queer? Yeah. But there's girls loving girls in them. You know how it is. Are you ready? First up, we've got Chu with Heart Attack.
These strange clicking sounds. Is this a secret message in Morse code? They're the calls of a male buff-breasted sandpiper courting a female on their breeding grounds far north of the Arctic Circle. He raises his wings, flashing their silvery white undersides as he sings his clicking serenade. A bit smaller than a robin, the buff-breasted sandpiper is strikingly handsome. Rich, tawny brown overall, with dark markings on the back and the light-colored breast for which it's named. And it's a shapely bird. Fine. Delicate, almost. It'll spend much of the year on grasslands in Argentina, migrating to the Arctic in late spring for breeding, then heading south again in late summer or early fall. In the lower 48, September's a good time to look for this long-distance traveler. During migration, they show a distinct preference for grassy expanses such as pastures and rice fields. Buff-breasted sandpipers are one of our scarcest shorebirds, and they face threats from pesticides and the loss of habitat. Joint conservation among the U.S., Canada, and Argentina under the Migratory Species Convention could greatly benefit this bird. But even small actions, like supporting growers of organic rice, can help secure the future of a threatened species, like the buff-breasted sandpiper. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
By Nogizaka 46. Before that, you heard another track by Nogizaka 46 called Guru Guru Katen. Put a pin in both of those songs because I will talk about them. They're both really influenced by Class S. And unknowingly, I have accidentally done a thing on my playlist. I didn't even realize this was happening. But anyways, I'm talking about Class S stories today, and the comic series that I read is an adaptation of a few classic Class S stories written by the prolific J. Japanese author Yoshio Nobuko. The comics were illustrated by Ozawa Mari. Can I find out when these were published? I don't know when these were published. I don't know when this comic series was published, so good luck finding them. But there are 12 stories from the Hanamonogatari Flower Tales series written by Yoshio Nobuko. And after I read the stories, I just felt like I just had so many more questions, specifically about genre, authorship, and readership. So kind of follow me here, okay? In order to kind of like understand my train of thought, I think we have to understand where Class S comes from. So Class S stories began being published in girls' magazines in the early 19th century in Japan. This was an era when the country is rapidly modernizing. The economy is not very good. There is a lot of like European influence in a lot of institutions, particularly education. I believe at this time, the government makes it a policy to make sure that every child is literate. Not that every child could actually pursue higher education, but every child must be literate. They have to complete elementary school. And so for the very first time as well, you had this emerging culture that was specifically for youth, though segregated by gender. Yoshio Nobuko herself, coming from a family that had quite a bit of privilege, and also being like a big nerd, Megan is like reading voraciously, and she begins writing at this time too. These stories about relationships between girls that are very emotionally charged and emotionally intimate. These stories are wistful and they're full of yearning, but not all of them are romantic. Instead, I think more accurately, though, you know, I'm not a literary critic and I'm not a historian, don't take my word for it, but this is what I've understood from the research that I've done and also from reading these stories. I think it's a little bit more accurate to say that these stories aren't necessarily all meant to be homoerotically charged. Rather, they're supposed to discuss the experiences of girls at a time when the options for girls is for the future are very limited. If you had come from a privileged background, you might be able to continue to pursue education after elementary school. There were not a lot of career options for girls and women. Like, you could become a nurse, you can become a teacher. That was like mainly it for a lot of folks. But more likely, you were expected to get married and become a wife and become a mother. These social expectations for girls to just eventually become wives and mothers, because the other options are just so few and limited, is a central theme in a lot of Class S stories, which is why in Class S we see a lot of like literary conventions and genre tropes that discuss innocence, purity, and the tragedy of adulthood, the tragedy of womanhood. Girls are considered beautiful flowers, hence the overwhelming amount of flower motifs in these stories specifically. And, you know, it's in the name, Hana Monogatari, flower stories. A lot of the times, the age gap between the two girls that the story is focused on has to be there to allow for the tragedy of adulthood and womanhood to come into play, to become present, as the younger character, the younger girl in this relationship, watches the girl who she has admired and become friends with become an adult by either, a lot of the times, either like being denied, you know, the rest of her education that she desired for, because her parents cannot or will not pay for the rest of her education, or it's like this older girl is graduating from high school and now is about to be married off to someone. There at times is a lot of emphasis around the world of girls as being one that is sacred and, as I mentioned before, pure, that needs to be protected, that is one that is, that tragically ends at some point in one's life. But this world is special because it is for nobody else other than the girls who are involved in this relationship. And whereas in a lot of Yuri's stories, there's like this emphasis on the forbiddenness of like this emotionally charged homoerotic relationship, in Class S, it's not always that this relationship is forbidden, because, you know, as I think I mentioned earlier, Class S stories aren't all necessarily romantic, but it is that it is sort of like a secret world for these two girls, and one in which both can escape to whenever they need comfort from the uncertainty of adulthood, the uncertainty of conventional womanhood. I think it's really important to remember that while Class S was really popular amongst anybody who reads, essentially, which is in large part how Yoshinobuko became so popular, importantly, they really spoke to girls and young women, because these were sort of their stories, right? When the girls' magazines that published Class S stories were first being published, a lot of the stories that were in there actually were written by men. They weren't they were actually written by the publishers themselves, according to actual Yuri expert Erica Friedman. But later on, as they began like getting traction amongst young female readers, their readers started to write in, and they were writing essentially like letters of admiration and longing for their classmates, or like a beautiful older girl who lived in their neighborhood, or who they saw on the bus. They were expressing, you know, feelings of uncertainty and doubt and anxiety about getting older. They were writing in specifically about their own stories and experiences. And I think thinking about Class S from that specific historical context, it should make us raise an eyebrow about how Yuri became popular in the way that it has, because it's shaky to say that Yuri majorly is written by women and is about these similar concerns as well. I'll talk more about that after the music break. Some classic Vocaloid for you. Forbidden Love Vocaloid. Here's Magnet. Here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is Bird Note. Do you like to guess the bird before we identify it? Then here's a short quiz for you. Bird 1. Yes, that's the song of the American robin. Bird 2. The olive-sided flycatcher. In a few weeks, these flycatchers will leave for their wintering grounds in South and Central America. All right, here comes bird 3. Yup, that's the cry of a red-tailed hawk soaring overhead. How about this one? Did you answer blue jay? Nope. This is the Steller's jay. If you're west of the Rocky Mountains, you're most likely to hear the Steller's Jay,